All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com.
Welcome to episode 285 of the DFO Rundown, brought to you by Betano.ca. I'm Jason Greger. He is Frank Saravalli. And we are a few days after the NHL trade deadline. Some guys have played. They're waiting for Jake Guentzel to make his debut with the Carolina Hurricanes. And Frank, it was a busy week. Did you get some sleep finally?
I slept like an absolute prince on Friday night. And I made it. It was kind of like a 300-pound man going downhill on a scooter with one wheel. A little wobbly at the end, but survived another deadline. And as I joked with another one of the insiders on Friday after it wrapped up, we all kind of text each other and say, hey, great job this week or whatever. Just a nice sort of friendly thing. And I said, every time we do one of these, he goes, we survived. I said, yeah, every time we do one of these, 1 year, we subtract a couple years off of our life. So that's sort of just the nature of the beast. Delete a couple years, make it through another deadline.
Well, hopefully there's not too many of them. Otherwise, that math won't be well for you at a certain age. So hopefully it's maybe like a month that it's deleting, not a year at a time.
I don't know. If you've seen the way I've aged, I mean, not entirely pretty. So got to get a handle on that.
Mix in some veggies. That'll help. Yeah. We got a unique pod today. And we are recording this on Sunday evening, in case anybody is wondering. But we got a unique pod today. It's going to be a lot of questions, a lot of fill in the blanks. And Tyler Yaremchuk will be running lots of it as we welcome it in. Ty, how you doing?
I am good. Yeah, figured instead of just letting you guys handle it, I'd run you through a little bit of a post-deadline gauntlet. So we'll try to hit on everything big that happened. We got a fill-in-the-blank segment, a buy or sell segment. We'll wrap it up and have some fun courtesy of our friends over at Betano as well. So let's not waste any time. Let's get right into it with the fill-in-the-blank portion of the show. It is delivered, as always, by DoorDash. 25% off, zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more. All you need to do is download the DoorDash app and enter the promo code NATION25. The first one I got for you guys, the Vegas Golden Knights getting Tomas Hertl was blank, Frank.
Ballsy. I feel like it's a really fascinating move. One, because didn't really see this coming. I'd love to give the other insiders some truth serum, because he wasn't, I never heard that name once. I know Kelly McCrimmon revealed that he first started talking to the Sharks about this in January. And in fact, Tomas Hertl had the last few days before the deadline. And mind you, this got done in the last hour of the day. And I just think it's so interesting based on the price they paid, the fit and acquisition for a player who, by the way, is still injured and has been out for a really long time. Another reason why he wasn't on the radar. And really, what does the age curve look like for Tomas Hertl? I'm wondering, you know, six more years at $6.7 million. What will that look like at a certain point? It's probably going to look really good for now, but maybe that's sort of the hallmark of the Golden Knights is they only really care about now. So I'll say it's ballsy. This is about as big and interesting swing as you could take in the final hour of a deadline that we've seen in a long time.
Gregs, what do you think?
I'm going to say it's muddy in the sense that there is so many things we don't know here. So you could look at it. Does Vegas know that Mark Stone isn't coming back? Right. Or do they know he's coming back? And they said, screw it. We're just going to really load up and try to go back to back and use the LTIR space to our advantage. Right. So there's, you know, there's that factor involved. Definitely it's risky because of the, Hertl, who's not necessarily the most fleet of foot player to begin with. Right. We've seen historically some guys in the NHL who aren't fleet of foot. And as they age on the other side of 30, you start to see that go away a little bit. The other thing is, how is this? You look at guys like Jonathan Marchessault and others, and is this like, okay, I know I'm done at the end of the season now. Like, they can't fit everybody in, right? If Stone's coming back, and then you throw in, you know, Noah Hanifin, who I'm assuming they're going to try to re-sign. So, you know what? It's cloudy for me and gray because there's so many unanswered questions here about it. Like, it's ballsy, as Frank said. I think that's a good word. But to me, it's one where, like, I wish I knew, like, lacerated spleen. I've talked to a lot of medical people, and they say they don't think there's any chance he's going to be ready to play on opening day of the playoffs, right? And then some say, well, it depends the severity of it. Well, right? So I don't know, but Frank said he reported that there was internal bleeding. I talked to a medical doctor. He's like, well, that's pretty serious. So, you know, who knows about it? But it is one it's a big risk because the chances of Hertl really kind of, you know, living up to his contract aren't of certain. Like, he's been okay, right? And I guess okay, like, if he's a 60-point player, then I guess that's a $6.5 million player, right? But, like, I don't know. His foot speed concerns me. And now maybe he'll come into Vegas, guys, because he's been 4 years in the desert of, like, nothing of Suckville in San Jose, and all of a sudden he comes back and he's just like, hey, I'm rejuvenated again. Because I don't care who you are. When you start your career being a perennial cup contender like San Jose was for Hertl's first few years, and then now you're not even close, and the organization is just the tire fire compared to what it was under Doug Wilson, I could see how maybe his motivation wanes. So, you know, that's another factor. Maybe Tomas Hertl, this just gives him a whole new lease on life.
Let me throw you guys just an off the cuff buy or sell. I know I said we'd start fill in the blank, but you buy or sell on this Vegas, call it philosophy of just always being all in. Like, you would imagine at some point it's going to catch up to them. Gregor, you mentioned, like, Jonathan Marchessault, is he sitting there going like, oh, is this my goodbye? Like, are you not going to have enough money? Do you not have plans for me this summer after we just won a Stanley Cup together? Frank, do you buy or sell on this, you know, kind of F the future, we ball now kind of attitude?
I buy, because what it takes on the back end of it is having, you know, the courage or just ruthless approach that they've shown already to be willing to cut bait on guys who have meant a lot to you. Marc-Andre Fleury, gone. Max Pacioretty, gone. Paul Stastny, gone. Riley Smith, gone. Jonathan Marchessault, you're just the next one. You're the next guy approaching his mid-30s that's had a real serviceable time span there where you've delivered a Stanley Cup, but most likely they're just going to cut ties just based on pure math. Now, I know what Bruce Cassidy said. I hope he stays here forever. It's hard to, the math isn't mathing at a certain point. And you have to be willing to walk from guys, even in uncomfortable situations. And that's one thing that Vegas has really shown their ability to do. There's lots of teams that can swing big. There's just not a lot of other teams that have the stomach to boot guys in the ass on the way out like Vegas has.
Well, Frank, bang on. And I would buy too. I'll say this. Look at the Pittsburgh Penguins. Imagine if the Penguins would have said, you know what? We'll re-sign Jake Gensel, but if Jenny Malkin, you're not coming back. You're old. Yeah, you won for us. You are, you know, your name, your jersey's going to go in the rafters later on in your career, but we're done. That's why the Patriots were great in the NFL. I know it's a different sport, but Bill Belichick did not allow personal relations to impact his business decisions for a long time. Now, eventually, you know what? They didn't have as many good players, but they kept at the top and won that many championships over a long period of time. Yes, they had Brady, but they would bring in good guys, get rid of veterans, and that's what Vegas has done, right? Like, look at the other teams, you know, that, like, look at San Jose. Mark Edward Vlasic, why the hell would they give him $7 million at that stage? They should have traded Thomas Hurdle 2 years ago. Rather than re-signing him, they should have done it. So Vegas, I think a lot of people in the NHL don't like it, because it's outside of how the NHL does. And the NHL is proven year after year after year of successful teams that don't want to cut bait when they probably should.
So looking at that return for San Jose, Greg, as you mentioned, this is obviously not the same San Jose organization that was ran under Doug Wilson for so long, decade plus. When you look at that return that they got for Hurdle, and I guess you could factor in the small Duclair deal as well. But you look at the Hurdle trade. They have to keep money for a significant chunk of time. They get two firsts, but they have to give up two thirds in the process as well. And when you look at where Vegas is likely picking and then where those San Jose thirds could be coming in, like, that's not exactly a massive drop. I know it's still somewhat substantial, but what do you make of the return that the Sharks got on this deal, Greggs?
Well, if you look at the percentages of first round picks and success rate compared to third rounders, like, the percentage is significant, right? Like, third rounders, even early third rounders, are like 11, 12% chance of being a 200 game player. So I did find it a little odd. They are retaining for 6 years, but I'll say this. I don't think they're a playoff team for 6 years. And they're only retaining what, like $1.6 million, I think it is, give or take some change. So it's not a huge amount. The problem is they're going to stink next year. And now they don't have any retention spots, because they have Burns, Carlson, and Hurdle. So they can't take on another contract until 2 years from now. And I look at the Sharks, and they've already, this will be what, year five that they've missed the playoffs, right? So they're easily going to be double digits, guys. Like, mark it down. They're going to be double digits straight without making the playoffs. And, like, it's going to be hard in that market. Like, they've had a great fan base for a long time, but when you lose that much for that long, it's eventually going to wear out on guys. Like, I don't care who you are. So that's going to be a challenge. Like, what they have to hope for is, right, I'll say it right now to San Jose fans, Gavin McKenna, 2 years from now.
I mean, Macklin Celebrini would be nice.
Well, that's this year. Yes. And they could get him, and they have a very good chance. So the next 2 years, they've got some guys here that they have a chance to get, that should be, like, Gavin McKenna. Have you guys seen his numbers as a 16-year-old in the WHL right now for the Medicine Hat Tigers? It is unbelievable how good he is. So they have to hope that not only they suck, but that they get lucky, because you can suck and still pick second, third, or fourth. Doesn't mean you get the Connor Bedard.
Yeah. Frank, the Sharks' return was blank at this deadline.
Oh, I would say the Sharks' overall organizational philosophy appears to be elementary. I just think that the rest of the league is playing chess and they're playing checkers. That's what it feels like. There's just not any next level thinking. You know, you mentioned the draft position. Once you get past 20 anyway, Greg's like, it's called a hope, which Vegas is very likely over these next couple years to be picking well into the 20s. So basically what you've done for two spots is you've moved up 40 to 50 picks, which is worth something. But for me, like, to retain and lock yourself into that corner, like, they've just made retained transaction mistake after retained transaction. Now, they would have had to retain on one of Hurdle or Couture to begin with. So, like, I get it. and it's better than retaining half. But like the real error is like Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson, like only retaining $1.5 million and closing off the slot, like for whatever it costs, like you should have just made Pittsburgh pick up that extra $1.5 million. How bad do you want the defenseman?
Yeah.
You got to eat the whole 11.5. We don't want that one. Like, so they have two slots locked up through 2027. All of next season, what you've done is you've basically guaranteed or sealed the fate of Logan Couture in a San Jose uniform until summer 2025 at the very earliest.
Frank, just a side note, I think Logan Couture is concerned about the fact he might even play again, right? His Fair. Surgery. Yeah. And that's another factor.
Maybe they knew that going in.
Yeah.
But here's the other part that I would say is like, again, I just want to know what the plan is. Give me your path forward. And I guess getting a first round pick and moving up 50 slots and a first round prospect, maybe that helps you in a small way. But I like, this isn't a groundbreaking return. I guess here's really where I come out. And when I say this, I don't want to be over the top and make it sound like I'm being absolutely critical, but I want to read for you a message that I got from a GM shortly after the trade Friday night. And it was basically just, let me just find it here. They just felt like the trade could have been made in the summer for way more return and no retention. That there's zero free agent centers available this summer, that they think someone would have paid for Hurdle at that $8 million number. And then to throw in 2/3, that you're basically trading pick, you know, in a worst case scenario, you're trading pick 32 for 65. Like if you're the Golden Knights, you're taking that all day long. And so when the news first started to leak out about the deal, they were assuming that it was 2 firsts and 2/3 going to San Jose, not San Jose putting in 2/3. So, you know, I think that's some really important perspective, is to take a step back and look at the summer and what that might have been. You don't know, but there's also, with Hurdle being injured, no real rush to do it now, which I guess is another part of it. Like, why did you need to make that trade on Friday in the last hour of the deadline?
Yeah, that's a great point. In the summer, there's more financial flexibility, and we'll talk about that because a handful of the players who were left on your board in the top 10, Frank, most of them were all the guys with term, right? So you wonder if that didn't play into it. Like, hey, in the draft in the summer, instead of three teams being able to squeeze these guys in, there might be 10 that are willing to make a move for them. Let's move along and move off the Hurdle Sharks Golden Knights thing, because that was the real stunner of the day. Your next fill in the blank, outside of the Hurdle move, the most surprising deal that we got in the deadline period was blank. Frank, is there one that stands out to you as the most surprising move outside of Hurdle?
That Andrew Peak trade from Columbus to Boston, I am still thinking about it. It still makes no sense. It still does not compute. And I understand that Derek Forbort is out on LTIR, but my God, have they watched Andrew Peak? And second, do they know that he has two more years at 275? And do they know that he's mostly been a healthy scratch this year, and that the Blue Jackets were going to be forced to buy him out this summer?
At 1/3.
Okay. Maybe that's what Boston is counting on, that they're just going to buy him out this summer. I don't know what the plan is.
Why would they do that? Like, yeah, I agree.
But why would you give up 1/3 to do it?
No.
Like, you could make the argument that Zboril, I know that he wasn't playing in the NHL at the exact time of the trade, and that his contract was a one way that Boston was probably looking to move off of, and they want to give him a change of scenery. These guys are closer to equal than anything else. And then to throw in a 3rd round pick on top of it, like I saw the news come across my plate. I had to take a step back and I started calling people saying, what am I missing here? There's some other element of this trade that I'm not digesting. It's not computing. And then to see the 3rd rounder on top of it, I was like, well, that makes sense. Columbus moved 1/3 to get off of Peak. And it's like, no, Boston gave up 1/3. Like, I don't, sorry. My brain is still 52 hours later, my brain's still exploding.
Yeah, I had that on my list. The other one, and it's not a big trade, but it's one that I'm like, I don't see why it makes sense. So Toronto went out and they added two physical defensemen. Right, they wanted some defensemen, they wanted some physical defensemen, and then right near the end of the day, they go out and add a smaller center in 5'10" in Connor Dewar on a team that is too soft to begin with. Not saying that he's necessarily soft, but what does he bring that's anything better than what they currently have? And they give up a fourth rounder for it. Like, I did that trade to me, I was perplexed by as to what was the huge benefit of making. He's a decent player, but when I look at what Toronto needs, Toronto, to me, the one big question I have about the Maple Leafs is, when push comes to shove, do they have enough shovers? And especially in their top guys. But so if then you're like, okay, well, we'll try to get some more shover. Like Max Domi, and it's not about size, because Max Domi is competitive as all hell. But I don't really see Dewar in that same situation for me. So that, even though it's not a big trade, you don't give up a lot. Like, the peak was my initial answer, so I'll look for a second one. And that was the other trade where I was kind of like, why you do that?
I actually like that deal, and I think he's going to surprise you with how competitive he is. All right. And the other part is, he's an RFA under team control and shouldn't be too expensive. So that part I like too, that it's at least if you're giving up an asset, and it's, again, for an asset that is probably, if they even make it to the NHL, is probably a bunch of years away, this guy is at least under team control.
Yeah, I just look at, like, Bill Guerin, you know, there's a certain type of player he likes. Now, obviously, he thought Brandon Duhaime.
He really liked those two guys.
Right.
He traded them because he wasn't going to be able to keep them because they've got their own cap problems.
You think Dewar's going to get that big of a raise?
It's more than they want to pay at that position. That's okay. What it comes down. I mean, Duhaime already got a raise and then now was in line for another one. They weren't going to do it. They just said, we'll find our next guys that we will pay.
Yeah, and that's fair. So then I wonder, like, it's not like Toronto's bursting with cap space.
Yeah. Well, they also got another kick in the shins with William Lagesson getting claimed on waivers as part of their machinations to create cap space to make moves. Not to say that Lagesson's the end-all be-all, just that this is a team short on bodies on defense. You lose one on waivers in the middle of the whole process that you're trying to keep everyone together.
Yeah, that was a weird little waiver flurry with three guys getting claimed on deadline day. Let's keep moving along through these. The next one I got for you guys, back out in the Western Conference, the Nashville Predators deadline was blank. They did a pretty decent amount of buying, all things considered. I mean, a month ago, we were talking about them as a team. One of our buyer sell questions was 2.5 defensemen moved out the door by the Preds before deadline day. So their decision to buy, Gregor, is blank.
Well, they had an eventful day, and I like it. I like their decision to buy. Now, obviously, they moved out Trennan too, so it was a little bit of a in and out for their team. Like, the Preds have been playing really well as of late, and I don't think that, like, Cinderella's slipper never fits in the NHL. They get close, and then all of a sudden you get to midnight, and we can go back through all the Cinderella teams. Maybe the LA Kings, if you want to argue, because they were an 8-seed team, they won. All the other Cinderella teams, when push comes to shove in the cup final, they're done. So do I think Nashville's going to win the cup? No. But UC Saros is on fire all of a sudden. And could they surprise and win a round? Probably. So I think I liked what they moved, the moves they made, actually. You know, they move out Trennan, but they bring in other guys. And so I'll say eventful. And they didn't have to give up a lot to make their team believe that, hey, we're still in the mix. And they're definitely, like, there's some pretty good separation now in the West, right? Like, I know Minnesota, and maybe we'll get to it later in the show, pulling the goalie in overtime. I loved it, by the way. But, you know, the Preds have built themselves up here a pretty good cushion to ensure they're a playoff team.
Frank, what do you make of the Preds deadline?
Felt like they were shopping at Dollar Tree. And by the way, what are you saying? Cinderella, the clock strikes midnight and all of a sudden she looks like Yakov Trennan? I mean, maybe. I would say it kind of felt like they were trying, like Barry Trotz was trying to reward his team, but it also felt like there was some window dressing here. Like, I guess look, he'd know the fits maybe better than me. And maybe there was parts of this that he had to, I don't like, to me, I'd rather have Trennan than Zucker. And like it to me, if you were going to move out someone, it would have been Carrier, because you know that you have some young guys coming that you can plug into that spot. And I think that was part of their concern. So I guess I referred to it, Jay, on the show as Barry Trotz working at Vandalay Industries, importer, exporter. Like, he's bringing some in and some out at the same time. Yeah. Importer, exporter of fine latex goods. I would say it's like, there's no net change here. Like, your team isn't appreciably better or worse, but you've like moved around some things, and so you got yourself a Beauvillier. Okay, fine. I don't see any real difference maker. So why upset what you had going, I guess, is my question.
No, that's fair. They brought in guys who they thought would have more skill. Trennan's obviously a much bigger, heavier guy, which they might miss come playoff time.
Exactly.
Looking back at Frank's top 15, and the reason I wanted to go to Nashville before this question, the next fill in the blank is the player that didn't move at the deadline that was the most surprising to you was blank. And for me, it would be Tyson Barrie, who came in at number 11, just because he's so clearly not in their plans. I thought they would be able to get a pick if they kept 50% of them. But you look through Frank's top 10, just as a reminder, Riley Smith didn't go, Pacioretty, Eberle, Buchnevich, Dowd, Johansson, Vetrano, and Chychrun. A lot of those guys had term, but that was a lot of big names we were banking on moving at some point, and they didn't. So, Frank, the most surprising name that didn't move was blank.
Riley Smith, what are they doing? Why wouldn't you? How much higher is his value going to be? Maybe he has a better season next year and it's better, or maybe you try again in the summer, but maybe people were trying to buy low because it was clearly a buyer's market at the time. I don't know what the answer is, but I'm very surprised that for a clearly non-playoff Penguins team that has folded like a cheap tent in a soft wind, like, what's the incentive to keep him? It doesn't make any sense to me. He's not a fit. He hasn't been a fit since he walked in the door there. I don't get it.
I'm going to go with Dowd in Washington. I thought for sure. And I wonder how much his injury potentially played a role in this. I look at Dowd and I think for what he does, he's incredibly good at it. And he's dirt cheap, right? When in a salary cap era where you can get a guy who can be a third line center who takes on big minutes against the other team's best players. And he hasn't, it's not like it's a one-off. I looked up his career, 450 plus games, and he's got a 56% goal share against elite players. That's not fluke, right? So this is a defensive guy who, by the way, starts like 85% of his shifts in the defensive zone when it's a stationary start. So I thought he would go, and I wonder about his injury if that scared some teams off.
Can we talk for a second about the ridiculousness of teams sitting out players? Alex Barabanov sitting out and then not being traded is embarrassing.
Well, wasn't that due to because of the hurdle retention? So they couldn't.
I get it. Yeah. But they were calling around to teams in the last hour saying, take this guy for free.
No.
You can't sit the guy out before then. If you don't have a firm, like, to me, I think we've jumped the shark. The whole Dumba and Zucker thing, like, those two guys essentially went for what was sixth round picks.
Yeah, like, I know.
This idea of sitting players out to try and drum up interest and a market and phone calls, I think it's really risky, ugly business.
Yes, I would agree wholeheartedly. And no offense, it's not like the players that were sitting out in those cases were guys that other teams were clamoring to get. Now, I think Tampa Bay might be, might be pleased as punch to get Matt Dumba for what they gave up, which is virtually, as you mentioned, Frank, like, you know, they get a seventh and they gave up a fifth. It's like an average of a sixth. And they were lucky because Sergachev's on LTIR, so they had the space to do it. But, you know, it's not like teams were knocking down the door and banging on the door to the Coyotes to get these guys.
And also them not retaining money probably hurt their ability to get better picks. Well, not probably, it would have.
It not hurt, it crushed it. But I guess when you have so many picks, what's the incentive to try and get some more when you could just shed $1 million off in each case, like $1 million in real cash off of your bottom line? And by the way, that does that not signal to you that this team is heading to Salt Lake more than anything that we've seen?
100%, man. Like, just let's just wait for the press conference in May that Gary Bettman announces in between probably round two and round three that Utah will be getting an NHL team.
I don't even know if it'll wait that long.
You could be right.
Shaving a little money off the books. All right. The last fill in the blank I got for you guys. Let's talk disappointment, because there wasn't as much action as we've seen in years past. And that led to a lot of fan bases saying, damn, I wanted my team to do more. So the fan base that should be the most disappointed with their team's deadline is blank, Jason.
It's a good question. Like, I look at the teams that I thought were real competitors, lots of them, Vancouver, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Carolina, you know, they made moves. Florida made a lot of moves. I guess I would go the LA Kings. That would be the one. Now, maybe the Kings are like, we don't think we're that good. So that would be the one. Now, it sounds like they were close, but it didn't come to fruition with Allmark. So I'd probably have to point to the Kings if I look at teams that, you know, other teams still did something to improve their lot. It might not be as much as you'd think, but I guess I'll go with the Kings.
I'm going to go with, I'm torn between the Wings and the Islanders, because neither one of those teams made a trade. Unless you want to count that little move that Detroit made, which
Lou,
I don't.
Lou loves his team, baby. Lou loves his team.
But if he really loved it, he would have been out there trading. This was four straight deadline days that he did not make a trade. And I guess maybe that's a bit of a misnomer, because he did trade for Horvat last year.
Yes.
But what are the Islanders?
Well, they'll be tied. Actually, the Islanders will be tied with Detroit if they hold on to their lead tonight against Anaheim.
That's what I mean. I think... Doesn't that feel like a team of all the years with bargain basement prices to add guys and guys that were left on the cutting room floor for free?
Yeah.
I mean, you mean to tell me you couldn't use a last year 47 point scorer in Barabanov for free 99? I'm not saying he's a difference maker. I'm just saying, like, what if? What if? That's my only question.
You wouldn't have had to give up that much, right? And I think they had about what, like in LTR space, about 2 point something, which would fit Barabanov. So
I'm just, one of those is more disappointing, the Wings or the Islanders?
Talk about the Red Wings. Frank, you were bugging me when I said, hey, I think I'm kind of a believer in the Wings. You're like, oh, it took you this long. Well, yeah. See, that's why I was hesitant, because now they've sucked ever since I said it.
Five straight losses. Let me throw another team into the mix for you for the all disappointment. When you look in the East, Florida went, made a couple of moves, added Tarasenko. Carolina went and made their move. We'll talk about that in a bit. But all the Rangers did was go get Jack Roslovic.
Wennberg.
They got Wennberg too. Do you think they did enough to keep pace with everyone else in the East?
But I don't think it was for lack of trying.
Okay.
They were deep in on Pacioretty. They tried really hard on Gensel. They weren't willing to part with some of their top prospects. And in that case, I don't really blame them. If we know that you were out there trying to make something happen and it didn't materialize, that's a lot different than getting nothing accomplished. They got to their check down option in Wennberg on the center market. They got to their check down option in wing on Roslovic. Okay. I mean, it's not perfect, but I also really liked the way that team was constructed already, that I'm not overly concerned. There's still, I think, quite a bit back in roster construction gap between themselves and Florida per se, but there's no guarantee that Florida, they'll ever see Florida. So are they just as good or well positioned as Carolina to win the Metro? You'd have a hard time convincing me otherwise.
Yeah, fair enough. Two ads for the Rangers on deadline day. All right, there you go, guys. That is the run of fill in the blank questions delivered by DoorDash, you can get 25% off, zero delivery fees when you use that promo code Nation25. You can also take advantage of the Double Dash feature, which lets you add a second stop onto your order for no extra delivery fees.
If you were going to say a team in the East, the team you could have asked was
Boston.
No, Toronto.
Yeah. I don't think they're close.
Maybe they don't think they are either.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, we are going to get into the buy or sell questions for today, and that is brought to you by Wendy's and the Daily Face-Off Survivor Pool. Now that the deadline's behind us, Frank can just zero in on surviving his weeks over at dailyfaceoffsurvivor.com. And we're sitting here talking about all the deals that went down on deadline day. But how about this deal from Wendy's? You can download the Wendy's app, score yourself 150 bonus rewards points, and take advantage of their new special, six nuggets for $3.49. That is a deadline day bargain that you can get any day of the week. Six nuggets for $3.49. Download the Wendy's app today. All right, buy or sell time. We talked about Hurdle. That was the big surprising move. The big move we all saw coming was the Jake Guentzel trade. I'm going to come out and say the Penguins did not get enough for Jake Guentzel. Buy or sell, Frank?
Buy. To not get a heart, I know that their preference was for prospects over picks. But in a year that you don't have one, to not get a hard first round pick is unforgivable to me. Because I also think the idea of trying to win a press conference by optics and calling that pick a conditional first round pick is insulting to everyone's intelligence. That is a second round pick until it isn't. And when I say until it isn't, that means that the Carolina Hurricanes have to win the Eastern Conference. They need to hang a banner in order for the Pittsburgh Penguins to get a first-round pick, which, oh, by the way, if they do, is 31st or 32nd overall. So not only did you not get one, but you've guaranteed to lock yourself into 31st or 32nd if you do.
Yeah.
I look at this deal from Carolina's perspective and I say, at least according to the talent evaluators I trust, they think that the Hurricanes gave up their 7th, 8th, and 9th best prospects.
Hoy.
No Nikishin, no Morrow, no Nadeau, no Mercury. Go through the whole list of Carolina's system and they didn't give any of those guys up. So if you're Pittsburgh, you better know what you're getting and you better be hitting some triples. Or you're going to need to explain to me why this all played out the way that it did.
Jay, what do you make of it?
So do I have to buy or sell? What was the question again?
Penguins didn't get enough for Guentzel. Buy or sell?
Didn't get enough. Yeah, I would buy 100%. They for a lot of the things Frank said, I can't really say it any better. I was I have a few guys who study a lot of the prospects, and they kind of were like, not sure. Now they all admit that, like, hey, prospects are still a little bit of a game of chance. Even a few years after you get them, and it feels like they said, hey, if we can get one to land, then it's decent. A second rounder, I was surprised there wasn't a first round pick involved, especially because I think, like, to me, the other thing I thought was missing from the trade was if Carolina re-signs him, they get something else. Because I think there's a very good chance Carolina re-signs him, and there was no added incentive there at all. So, you know, good work by Don Waddell. And I think this is an excellent trade by the Carolina Hurricanes.
So Gregor just said he thinks Guentzel resigns. Frank, you buying or selling on that? Jake Guentzel back with the Canes long term?
Yeah, I think that's going to happen. And that's another part of it. Why wouldn't you? It felt like the communication throughout the whole process, monitoring it, was not great. Like, the Penguins at any point this year did not negotiate with Jake Guentzel. There wasn't ever really a communication factor of like, hey, you know, it's August. What are you thinking? How are you feeling about this year? Do you want to come back? Would you entertain coming back? Nothing. And I just feel like, first off, what you end up doing is angering the player, which I do think is what happened throughout the course of the year. The longer it went on, no communication. It's a guy that gave 8 sterling years to the Penguins organization. I felt like in that case, he probably deserved a little bit better. And then to get to the finish line and not add into some sort of, you know, instead of the condition being that the Canes get to the cup final, like, make the condition be he re-signs. That's way more likely than them getting to the cup final just on pure math. I don't know. I'm not getting it. I'm not seeing it. And then to get through that and not make another single trade? How? Why?
They traded Ruweedle.
That doesn't count.
Okay. Yeah, I know what you mean. I think Penguins fans should be incredibly disappointed. Canes kind of got him for a prayer, all things considered, when you look at what other deadline prices for the top guys usually are. How about the other deal that Carolina made? A third round pick for Evgeny Kuznetsov at 50% retained. I know we were having this debate during the Daily Faceoff Live trade deadline stream of like, okay, is this the wake-up call for Kuznetsov? But it feels like he's had a number of wake-up calls already in his career. But Kuznetsov bouncing back in Carolina. Gregor, are you buying or selling on that?
I am buying. And the other thing, guys, hey, unfortunately with addiction, there's lots of guys who, there isn't just, oh, I need one bounce back. There's a reason why it's called addiction for lots of people. And it's, his life is back on track, but for three, I'm not sold that he's going to give them everything they want this year. I think it's going to take a while, right? He's been out for quite some time, but I love this bet by the Carolina Hurricanes. They get Guentzel, who is a proven playoff performer. Kuznetsov, when he wants to go, man, Kuznetsov is one of the most talented, just raw talented players in the NHL. Now, I don't know how much he has left, but at 3.9 mil, I love the bet for next year. You know, this year, if he pans out for them, great. I think he'll be okay because I think he's a very creative player. But man, I think there's a really good chance that next year you're going to look at Kuznetsov and this guy's going to be a 60-point player plus for next year. And you're like, man, 3.9 mil, that's a really good deal.
I'm going to sell for now. Look, I think they've got a lot of things to point to as reasons for hope. Justin Williams played with him. He was in Don Waddell's ear. Rod Brind'Amour coached him at All-Star Weekend. He remarked how competitive he was and how much he enjoyed spending time around him. Those are all really great sort of, you know, instances to point to and say, hey, this is what we think could happen. I tend to be more rooted in reality, and I know that there's off-ice extracurriculars that can really impact a player's play. But for me, I just look at Kuznetsov and I say he has been a shadow of himself on the ice for at least, I want to say, basically three seasons now. You have to go back to, I know 2022, he had 78 points, but he was really not good in 2021 either. So, you know, maybe two, maybe three, whatever, however you want to split it up. But the point is, we've seen enough of a sample size for a pretty extended period of time. And yes, this is a player who had asked for a change of scenery and had been frustrated with everything that had gone on. I'm going to sell on him bouncing back. But I, if this makes any sense, I will buy on the Hurricanes taking the chance to find out, because I think it's almost zero risk. If this is an abject disaster to close out this season and you feel like he's someone you can have in your organization, then buy him out this summer.
Yeah.
And if not, you've crushed it at $3.9 million for this year and next. And I think one of the really impressive things about what Carolina does, I mentioned on our show on Friday, that no team in the NHL finds market inefficiencies like the Canes do. And if you think about it through this prism, we've got the Golden Knights that are the big spender on the other side of the coast. But on the East Coast side, the Canes are just as aggressive, but in a totally different way. They're willing to take chances on players that have checkered pasts, that have damaged reputations. Whatever the case may be, it's just one other way of finding value. And I would say, whatever the case may be, I think it's a really important philosophical question for any organization to have, which is, are we trying to be a team that wins a Stanley Cup, or are we trying to be a team of model citizens that are just a bunch of good guys? So what's your objective? How much are you willing to put it on the table and find out and take a chance on someone who may have some issues with them? I think Carolina's been great at that. And you know who else had feasted on that for years? The Preds.
Yeah. Interesting. Do you think part of it too is just having a guy like Rod Brind'Amour at the helm, who can be a bit of a no-nonsense coach, and you've had strong leadership from up top for a while now? Like, that allows them to take those risks as well.
You can't get anything past Rod Brind'Amour.
Yeah.
That guy does not mess around. There's no bullshit. And he's played on every team possible for 20 years. He can see it and smell it from a mile away. So I don't think he'll last very long, but he obviously got a really good feel the first time around. I trust their instincts. I just think we've seen enough to see that he's probably not going to get back to that level, but damn, does he have some incredible skill.
We've already talked about the Leafs a little bit on the pod, but my next buy or sell question was about their blue line and whether or not you're buying or selling on its ability to take them on a playoff run. But I want to go back to something first, Frank, that you said when I brought up the Rangers. You said it wasn't for a lack of trying. They just simply had to go to their checkdown options. With the Leafs, do you get the sense that they made hard pushes for any of the higher end names out there and just missed? Or were they sitting there going, maybe it's just not our year?
I think they called on a bunch of players. I never got the sense that they were in hard on anything that went down.
But honestly, like, outside of Chris Tanev, who are the other defensemen that you'd really go in on? You're like, man, we really got to get this guy. Like Noah Hanifin, I guess that'd be it. Right. Like Toronto doesn't need forwards. Toronto has the most goals in the NHL amongst forward group, right? Like, they need a defenseman. And so they went out and got two physical guys. I think the mistake from Toronto was that they started the season with the major question mark that everybody knew. And it's hard to fill it during the year. It's hard to fill that hole. And I think what's going to happen in Toronto is they're going to get to this summer again, and they're going to be like, geez, we got to upgrade our defense, which has been the same story for 4 years. So do it in the offseason. To hope that you can do it at the deadline every year, I think, like, you want to add a few. Like, Chris Tanev, he's not the deciding factor in Dallas. He's a complimentary guy to a very good team, right? Toronto didn't need complimentary guys. They needed a top pair defenseman. Really wasn't any of those guys out there. And I think that, to me, is where their problem started in Toronto, was in the offseason. And I think, unfortunately for Leaf fans, you wait in the summer, the exact same articles, the exact same conversations are going to be discussed. It's going to be the same thing. And so they're going to have to make a really hard decision in Toronto. At some point, they're going to move off one of their big guys to bring in a defenseman. That's, I think, the only way they can do it.
No one's been able to do it so far. And until someone does and rips the Band-Aid off, again, it's another one of those I'll believe it when I see it things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also think there was something floating around there this weekend. I saw that, you know, the Flames owner blocked trading Tanev to, he turned down a first round pick and blocked trading Tanev to Toronto because he's vindictive about Brad Treliving. I think that is complete and utter bullshit. The Toronto Maple Leafs were never trading a first round pick for Chris Tanev unless it was part of a larger package. Never.
Speaking of,
and would the owner be would the owner be that vindictive?
Like that? I don't think he was very happy with the way things played out. I mean, remember, he did try and block Brad Treliving from taking any job at first.
Yeah, which is like, why? I've never understood that. Like,
I won't say anymore, but that didn't make any sense.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of moves that, hey, maybe didn't happen, how about this one? Linus Ullmark will not be a Bruin next season. Buy or sell, Frank?
Buy. I mean, did you see Swayman and Ullmark hug on Saturday night?
No.
As he went onto the ice, Swayman was pointing and he's like, "You stayed." You can see him say it. His mask is off. And he says, "You stayed." I mean, Ullmark blocked the trade. There's no two ways about it. He was not willing to waive his no trade clause to go to the Los Angeles Kings. Fact. I mentioned this before. I thought that this was, if it was going to happen, it would be a summer transaction. Obviously, the Bruins were trying to find ways to create value. They didn't have picks. They don't have a ton of prospects. And the only real way to create value is to shake up your goaltending situation, which needs at some point to be addressed from a pure contractual standpoint. So I think it's a mistake. Like, I'll say that just because I think that's been the backbone of their team. That's just purely my opinion. Maybe they think that Brandon Boosie can come in and be that guy already because he's subject to waiver claim next season and they don't want to lose him. He's been pretty good in Providence. Maybe they just know things I don't. I think a huge part of their success these last 2 years has been owed very specifically to their goaltending.
Greg, to buying or selling on Ullmark staying in or Ullmark being moved out of Boston this summer?
Dude, I would be buying that as heavily as I would be buying stocks in the old Bee-Bald, which is great for your shaved head. Okay. That's how Bee-Bald, head and face, buddy. It's unbelievable.
You've never used it on your balls too.
Promo code?
No. No,
it'd be funny if it was Bee-Ball.
Bee-Bald, buddy. Bee-Bald's a great name. And it's trust me, because a lot of people don't understand that it's very important to keep your chrome dome nicely moisturized so it looks good. So I would, I'd be buying stocks in that as much as I would that Ullmark is not going to be a member of the Bruins.
What do you make?
You don't need two great goalies. I know it's that people are like, oh, yes, you do. I'm like, no, you don't. Because one of them at the end of the day is going to play in the playoffs. They proved last year they're not going to rotate. Now, maybe they learned from the mistake. But ultimately, you're paying a guy $5 million to sit on your bench for half the time. Get a quality backup, spend that money to help your team elsewhere.
Okay, if you're Ullmark, like, again, the friendship with Swayman, that's great, that's heartwarming. But if you're sitting there being like, okay, they're going to try really hard to move me in the summer, why would you not want to go to LA of all places? Like, that seems like a great spot to spend the next year in a big contract. Man,
they don't like to travel. LA's got brutal travel.
It's not even that. It's just a huge family change. It's not like, hey, I'm going to sneak home for the weekend and go see my kids in Boston. It's on the other side of the goddamn continent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. Last one I got for you guys in the buy or sell of the teams that are currently on the outside of the playoff picture in the East. I'm going to say the New Jersey Devils and their new goaltending duo have the best chance of getting hot down the stretch and taking over either for the Wings or Flyers in the East. You buying or selling, Frank, on the Devils getting hot with their new goaltending?
I'm selling. I had an executive text me today and said, what is your projected order of standings for the East? And I said, this is just wild card only. Or I guess the bottom end of the East playoffs. I said, in this order, Detroit, Tampa, Islanders, then Devils, then Flyers, then Caps. The Flyers, look, I get that the math is certainly in their favor, but man, that team looks like it hit a wall. And that game against Tampa the other night, I know Torts getting thrown out was what everyone talked about, but they're getting their doors blown off, it feels like, on a nightly basis. They don't have Carter Hart in net anymore to cover. And look, I'm a big Eric Johnson fan, but geez, like, did people watch him toward the end in Buffalo? Like, he was basically trending towards healthy scratch on a really bad Sabres team.
Greg, you think the Devils and the new goaltending have enough?
Well, I will say right now the Islanders are in a better position than the New Jersey Devils. They're going to be 6 points up with a game in hand on the Devils, so definitely not. Tampa Bay, to me, is they're going to be the number one wild card team because I think the Islanders are going to catch the Flyers. And then it comes down to the Flyers, the Red Wings, and don't count out the Washington Capitals. So I'll say no to New Jersey because, first of all, I'm not a big believer in Kaapo Kähkönen, number one. You know, Jake Allen's going to be a real big wild card, but I don't see it happening. The only positive for the Devils is that Timo Meier is starting to find his game. That's the one big positive lately for them.
They had a really big night the other day. So just a little bit too little too late, Frank, on the goaltending front for New Jersey.
Yeah, I think there's just a hole. Maybe Travis Green can simultaneously clean up a lot of the issues that they have, but I just feel like there's a lot of other problems with this Devils team that needs serious correcting. And the fact that they already started to clamp down on minutes for Luke Hughes and Simone Nemitz is probably a pretty good indication that they've, I mean, just like anyone their age, there's a lot to learn and grow. So they've got a lot of work to do there.
All right, we're going to move on to our final segment of the show. I got a couple of things that are courtesy of our friends over at Betano. 19 plus, please play responsibly. The game starts now at Betano.ca. Their futures odds for the NHL are continually getting upgraded. Let me just start with this. Before I even show you the odds board for Stanley Cup winner, which team in the league improved their Stanley Cup chances the most during the deadline period? We'll say not just deadline day, deadline period, Gregor. Which team improved their cup chances the most?
It's good. I'm going to go with the Carolina Hurricanes. They came into the weekend 16th, actually tied with Philadelphia for fewest goals amongst their top six. They had 107. And people can tell me all they want about depth guys and, you know, everyone, oh, Vegas beat Edmonton with their depth guys. What the hell are you talking about? Eichel, Barbashev, and Marchessault were +7 5-on-5 in that series. They murdered the Edmonton Oilers. Their fourth line was even. You got to win in the playoffs with your best guys. Yes, you need somebody chipping in. Jordan Martinuk scoring a few goals will be great. But at the end of the day, you need your top guys scoring more. They got Jake Guentzel. They had the most talented player available. They got him. And they took a good risk on a guy in Kuznetsov who's very talented. The last 2 years prior to this year, he was 58th in the NHL in points, which is, do the math, that's like a top two guy on a team, right? Yeah, he maybe isn't the dominant force he was, but he's still a pretty talented player. So I'd say Carolina because they addressed their biggest weakness. The other teams had a complimentary guys. They desperately needed a score, and they got one in Guentzel.
Frank, which team improved their cup odds the most?
That's a really good question, like really good answer, Jay. I would say Carolina is a great choice. I'm going to go with Colorado. I think Colorado's chances, the longer they play, are going to continue to get better. They're going to be, you know, Nichushkin, huge. I think swapping Mittelstadt for Johansson is enormous. There's not a huge drop off from Byram to Walker. Maybe over the long term there is, but not right. It's at least enough to kind of cover you up for right now. And I just think the upside on Mittelstadt playing with really good players to go from a 50 point guy to 75 is really likely. I do have questions, and their goaltending may be what kills them, and the fact that they didn't address that. is really intriguing. But I think they had made the decision at some point over the course of the week that Eustace Annanen was going to be the guy to back up Georgiev. It's just that Georgiev's numbers aren't great. So I would say the Avs, to me, among all those teams in the West, improved the most. And I say that knowing that Vegas made some enormous additions.
Yeah. And the thing about Annan, and how about his last two starts, fellas? Back-to-back shutouts. Now, I know it was Chicago, but still, it's back-to-back shutouts, man.
Yeah.
That's six, you know, he's a big goalie. Could he be the shocker goalie? I don't know. But I like Colorado because they added some sandpaper to a highly skilled team. And
some depth. They really needed depth.
Yes, they did.
And the other thing too, we should point out, Jared Bednar said today that Gabriel Landeskog won't be returning before essentially the time frame that doctors provided him. So he had surgery on May 10th. So it was 12 to 16 months. So it won't be, he said it won't be before then. So they're going to have to play basically, you know, well past the second round in order for Landeskog to come back. But for that carrot to be dangling for this team, I mean, is it unlikely that the Avs get to the conference final? It's not for me.
Well, the challenge that they have is they might finish third in that division. And that means you're going to have to go through Winnipeg and Dallas. That's like, God, right now, that top three, whew, like
you it is such a big deal this year to finish number one in the West, period.
Yes.
Not just number one in your division. Because number one in your division, but the runner up to the other division is going to get Nashville. And not to say Nashville is going to be an easy out, because with Saros, it's a big difference than, you know, facing that eighth team. Or sorry, Nashville is going to be the eighth team. But I just think compared to most years and compared to the other seven teams that are in the bracket, Nashville is the one clear disparity in talent.
Just with what we know about how big goalies are in a best of seven playoff series, isn't LA maybe now the easier out in the West than Nashville? Or we're not going that far yet.
And I still think, by the way, that Vegas finishes ahead of LA.
Yeah, me too.
All right.
Two more for you guys. I'm going to show you the top 12 in terms of the odds over on Betano. Edmonton is the leader. I know public money kind of shapes these things a little bit, but Edmonton comes in at plus 550. Florida's next. Then it's Colorado, New York, Vancouver, Dallas, Winnipeg at 10-1, Boston 11-1. Carolina's also 11-1. Then Vegas rounds out the top 12 at 12-1. Greg's, give me one team that's too high on this list and one team that you would put lower. One team that's too high, one team that's too low. Sorry.
Ooh, interesting question. That's top 10, not top 12, right? Am I missing?
Oh, yeah. Line? Sorry. I have 10 there. Yeah. I don't know how to count all that well.
So I want to make sure. Yeah. Okay. Geez, who would be too low? I'd probably say Carolina, I think, would be too low. Only because I think, if you finish second, that might be the easiest first round matchup right now, whether it's the Islanders or the Flyers. So I would say they're too low. And like Edmonton, the favorite, like I know Edmonton does have the best record in the NHL since Knobloch took over. So I know some people out there might be like, what? But they've been a really good team for a long time and they have the league's best player. But that much better than Colorado and the Rangers, I'd probably drop Edmonton to maybe more like a plus 850, still maybe in the top two, but just not as clearly ahead of Colorado or Vancouver or Dallas.
Yeah, Edmonton was going to be my pick to slide down. I feel like they don't deserve to be that far ahead of the pack or even ahead of the pack at all. Frank, give me a team that's too high, a team that's too low.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm going to just try and spice it up and do something a little different. I'm going to say the team that is too high is Van. I really like the Canucks and what they're building, but they've got a really incredibly difficult road to get there. And I think given their lack of playoff success, I think it's going to be hard to break through and win this year.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, still waiting on MRI and other information, but it seems like Thatcher Demko's injury is relatively minor.
Yeah, well, that would be huge news. And honestly, it might actually benefit them if he misses a week or two. They've got a 10-point bulge on the Oilers. I know Edmonton has three games in hand, but you know, if Demko gets a week or 10 days off, guys, I don't think that's the worst thing for Vancouver.
Sorry, did you say bulge?
10-point bulge, Frank. It's a large bulge.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about a bulge. Okay. The team that was too low would be Vegas.
Yeah, I agree.
10th out of 10. I mean, I'm sorry. There's not nine teams that are better than Vegas.
Well, just so you guys know, Vegas since December 21st, 26th in the NHL.
I know. And one thing that I've been thinking about with the Canes too is their goaltending good enough? But Kochetkov's numbers are really good.
They
are. Since December 1st, 24 games played, 14-7-2 with a 920.
And Freddie Anderson made, like, I think, save of the year candidate today against the Calgary Flames. He looked really good during stretches of that game. Kate, last one we're going to wrap up with. This is one of the fun props up at Betano that I really like. Which division is going to win the Stanley Cup? So the favorites are the Atlantic and the Pacific at plus 225. The Central's in third at plus 300. The Metro's in last at plus 320. If you had to pick a division that you think is the most likely to win the Stanley Cup this year, what division would you be throwing your money behind? Frank, you got an answer?
The Metro.
Really?
Yeah. First off, I think they've got the best value. Second, I think all the teams in the West are going to beat the absolute piss out of each other. I'm not a big believer in the Bruins and as far as being an authentic Stanley Cup threat. I do like the Panthers in the Atlantic, but I'll take the two teams in the Metro, New York and Carolina, to break, you know, just based on volume to break. This is how my brain works, on volume to break through. I just feel like in a year in which the West is so much clearly better than the East, top to bottom, I'm just mean of the eight playoff teams, I just think it's going to be so much of a war to get there that it opens the door for someone in the East to just come in and gong you right in the face in the Cup final.
It's a good question.
Crazy? Am I crazy?
No, I do think there'll be a battle, but at the same time, I could see one team, it's all about matchups and get hot, and all of a sudden they smoke one of the other teams. You don't see it coming. But
second and third rounds are going to be a war of attrition in the West.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not like that in the East.
Yeah. But you know, Florida Tampa could be a hell of a matchup if it happens. I'm going to say, I'm going to go with the Pacific because I think the Central is harder to get out of. And I think the Pacific team will have a little bit easier of a run through two rounds than the top three in the Central. So I'll go with them. It was close though. Like, what's the odds again for the Atlantic? Because Florida, I really like Florida.
Plus 225.
Ah, yeah. See, they had the worst odds. So I will go with the Pacific.
Yeah, and I mean as well, like, I don't really believe in Toronto. I don't really believe in Boston. If you were going to take the Atlantic there, I would just be like, hey, go throw money on Florida to win the Cup. My pick would be the Central. I'm not going to overthink this. I'm just going, which division has the best collection of best teams or top teams? It's Dallas, Winnipeg, and Colorado. I love what Winnipeg did, going out and getting both Monahan and Toffoli over the last bit. Colorado got a little bit bigger, tougher to play against. Dallas didn't have to do a ton because I think their roster is so damn near perfect already. So I think those three teams, you can talk about maybe beating each other up a little bit in the first two rounds, but I don't know. I think that's three quality cup contenders in one division. 3-1. I like those odds. All right, gentlemen, that is everything I got for you guys in the mega fill in the blank buyer sell Betano cup related questions edition of the show.
I've got one question for both of you.
Okay.
Two game suspension and $50,000 fine for John Tortorella. Too much, too little, or just right?
Oh, too much. Like, he didn't swear. He just said no. Like, he didn't even, like, he didn't go that crazy.
He did swear. He was swearing.
Did he swear a few times?
Yeah, okay. Fuck you. I'm not fucking leaving.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that one.
But it was repeated F-bomb after F-bomb.
Yeah. Okay.
Fuck
either
off.
Way, he left the bench eventually, delayed the game for I don't even know how long, to be honest.
Not that long. 30 seconds.
Like, when I look at what guys plays on the ice that are dirty and cheap and they don't get two game suspensions, to me, two games is a little bit high. It is interesting. Like, the coaches association must be like, what the fuck's going on? Players make way more than us on average. And there's a minimum, there's a maximum of what they can get fined. And we can get fined 50K. What the hell's going on? If I'm the coaches association, I'm like, hey, we got to figure this out for the next CBA, guys. Like, we got to have a maximum on what our fines can be. Although I know the CEO of the Flyers said he'd paid himself. But
that's, by the way, you can't do that.
I know.
Expressly forbidden in the CBA. So I thought that was maybe hey, Dan, like, love the spirit for Dan Hilferty, and perhaps him saying it was worth it just from a pure PR perspective. But you said the quiet part out loud.
Yeah, probably. You know what? So Tortorella's maybe getting a raise in the offseason for 50K. But I thought it was a little bit too much. Like, I have to admit, like, it kind of made me chuckle. No, I'm not going. It's like a toddler when you tell them to go shower or go to bed, and they're like, no, and eventually, you know, you're going to win, but it just takes some time to break them down.
9 minutes and 11 seconds into the game, the Flyers are getting their doors blown off.
Oh, dude,
4-0. So Tyler, not enough, too much, just right.
I think it's a hair much. Again, like, if you want to set the precedent that, like, when you're kicked out, you go, you don't sit there and throw a temper tantrum, then sure. But I feel like you could have done two games or the 50 grand. Both feels like a little bit much. It is funny that, a player who makes, you know, even the league minimum can only get fined a couple $1,000 and a coach gets 50. Let me throw another one your way then, if we're going to talk about some...
Oh, wait, let me answer though. I wanted to say just right.
Okay.
This was his 13th fine. This is also a coach who has physically tried to fight another coach and has been suspended for a long period of time. And it says very clearly, if you continue to show up the officials and you get these fines, and if it happens within a certain period of time, it's doubled. So it started out as a warning, then a $25,000 fine, now 50. Like, at some point it's just on you. And when you've been fined 13 times in your career, you've now become the Brad Marchand of coaches.
What a great analogy. What did we make? You buying or selling on the Minnesota Wild pulling their goalie in 3-on-3 overtime? We in on that?
Of course. How could you not be? Like, what? Like, let's be honest. What do they have to lose so they don't get a... Because for people who don't know the rule, if Nashville scores, Minnesota gets no points. Right. So there's a risk involved, but there's a reward. I love risk reward. And John Hines, like, they're 9 points back, guys, even with the win. Like, let's be real here. The odds are extremely low. But now, I know they're closer to LA and Vegas, but either way, I love this play by the Wild. Your players love it when you show faith in them. They love it. In football, guys are gambling all the time. The players are getting rockets. They love it. So I have no problem with it. It's great.
Yeah, I'm all for it too. You want to hear a really funny story though? Coaching minor hockey, our kids don't understand the concept of pulling the goalie. So when you pull the goalie, they start crying hysterically on the bench, and they're like, "Why would you do that to us?" And it's like, "No, guys, like, we're trying to win. Like, you get to put out an extra player." They're like, "But our net's empty." And it's like, yeah, but that's the point.
Oh, yeah. It's funny.
Their brains explode and they cannot handle it emotionally. And it is one of the funniest concepts. I'm like, why are we crying here? Stop it. Get it together.
Well, hey, guys, like in Edmonton Minor Hockey Week, when you go to overtime, you play a minute of 5-on-5. No one scores. And it's a minute of 4-on-4, 3-on-3, 2-on, and it goes down to 1-on-1. And so our coach, as I was telling him, said, if we get to 1-on-1, when our guy gets the puck, I want him to stand behind the net. I told him, and our goalie's going to race to the bench, and we're going to get a guy on. We're going to go 2-on-1 because the other team's forward probably won't retreat. He'll stand there, right? And then you skate around the net, pass up. We're going to have a breakaway, and we're going to go for it. And they were like, and I told our kids, the kids were like, at first, they're like, what? But they can just score. I said, yeah, but they'd have to get the puck to score. You guys will have the puck. Oh, okay. So we never got to it, unfortunately, but it would be unbelievable. That's what I would do in 1-on-1. I'm pulling the goalie the minute I have possession of the puck.
Love it.
Yeah, I love it.
Their brains explode. They cannot function.
Yeah. Hey, here's another fun one for you guys. The Ottawa Senators, Frankie talked about how the West is better than the East. The Ottawa Senators are 0-14 on the road against West teams this year. 0-14. They just lost to the Sharks. They have two road games left. Can they be the Detroit Lions and go 0-16 on the road against Western teams? I'll tell you who they play. They're in Winnipeg and they're in Minnesota.
Of course they can. And I'll take it one step further. It is an absolute disgrace if the Ottawa Senators go through the remainder of this season and don't install a permanent head coach. I think they do themselves such a disservice. Look at what Rick Tocchet was able to just the messaging.
Yes.
I know people say, oh, but these games don't matter. No, it's about setting proper expectations for a team that has quite clearly become content with all the money that they have coming to them on their long-term contracts, that they don't compete. And you've got to begin to change the cycle there. And I know that Jacques Martin has tried to instill some solid fundamentals, but he's not the long-term answer for this team. He's the oldest coach in the NHL by a very wide margin, not very with Rick Bowness, but a wide margin. And there's no reason, unless you feel like the person you want is not available or you have someone very specific in mind, there's plenty of good coaches with eight being changed out this season to be available to you for the rest of this year to at least begin turning the page.
Yeah, I was thinking more like, oh, you get to the summer and then you see what the coaching market's like. But you make a good point. Like, there are enough qualified names out there that you could pick a good head coach and slide them in right now. And whatever, in the last couple of years, they've built up momentum in the end of the year. And what have we seen kind of every
Craig
time?
Craig Berube, right? Jay Woodcroft. I mean, go through the list. Like, there's plenty of good coaches available.
Yeah, fair enough.
Todd McClellan. I mean, like, how many more do you need before you can say, hey, like, yeah, is someone really going to fire their coach? Like, a quarter of the league has changed over since the start of this season. How many more are going to become available once the season ends and they're going to gong their coach? I'd say no one.
Yeah, market, I was going to say, who's, unless there's some assistant coach that they love, who else is going to be available that isn't available now?
I don't get it. And I think they're doing themselves a huge disservice. And look, the idea too of setting the table for the summer, I get that that's important, but it would have been really nice to send a wake-up call to the rest of that team and be aggressive on deadline day or deadline week to change it up there because they desperately need it.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. All right, we went nearly an hour 15 with the deadline recap show, gentlemen. So a big shout out to the both of you for letting me again put you through the ringer, going through basically every move that happened around the deadline. A big shout out to Botano, DoorDash, and of course Wendy's with the Daily Face-Off Survivor Pool. And no pod Thursday, correct, gentlemen?
No pod Thursday, but today first off, this is one of the most fun pods we did in a while. And second, we got to give the people what they want. They want more Yaremchuk. I keep getting the tweets, the buy or sell segment and the fill in the blank. They love it. So figured turn it into a whole pod.
Love it. Awesome. So yes, we get a rare week off. They get to recharge after a busy week. And then we'll be back on Monday.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, hockey fans, listen up because we've got something special coming your way this playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. And let me tell you, it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of those questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. That sounds simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total amount of goals in the game will be over or under a certain amount, and that's where the real strategy starts to kick in. Next up, you're picking who's going to find the back of the net first, and you're going to want to be careful because that's one that could be cooked early on in the game. And finally, you got to predict which period is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That's up to you to decide. Now let's talk about prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? For the daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards to treat yourself to some fresh Nation gear, and you might even win a jersey from your favorite team. And for the big dogs, those who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.